Welcome to the Northside Christian Church podcast. This is the collection of weekly sermons from our staff. Northside Christian Church exists to connect people to Christ and one another. So we want to hear how God is working in your life. Share your story by emailing amen@northsidechristianchurch.net or by tagging your tweets with #AmenNCC. For more information about Northside, visit our website, northsidechristianchurch.net.
Maybe you've noticed this increase in obstacle courses that pretty much every major city in the United States now has these obstacle course race and competitions, things like Tough Mudder, things like the Spartan Race. They've got Warrior Sports where people can compete in this stuff. You've probably seen some of these. It's pretty incredible. It's pretty fun to watch. I've not been in one yet, I have to admit. But, you know, it's the kind of thing where people are, you know, working together and they're crawling under barbed wire and they're crawling through mud and they're carrying tires up muddy hills. They're getting blasted with water out of hoses. You know, they're jumping into these huge, you know, ice boxes they have to swim through to get through the ice to climb out. And it's just one obstacle after another that is pretty much designed to give as much pain in your life as you can take in a short amount of time. And I'm just curious, anybody in here actually competed in one of these, done it? You want to just raise your hands right now and admit that you in this room, okay, one, two, a couple of you in the room, three in the back I'm seeing have participated in this stuff. I admire you. It's pretty awesome. But apparently it is a growing trend. In fact, on Saturday, I'm minding my own business, but I was looking on Facebook and I saw one of the families in our church, here's the Meadows right here, apparently just did this. And they succeeded, I guess. It looks successful to me. So I don't know, that's a Tough Mudder. I can't even tell what it is. I don't even know. But do this. See, yeah, people are, you know, it used to be you had to get drafted, like in the military, to do stuff like this. But now, you know, people pay money to do this. And I know it's because it's fun and it's challenging and, you know, you try to overcome these. See, do you have what it takes? It tests your conditioning. You know, can you do this? But the fact is, with these kinds of events, it's also a controlled environment. And so, you know, if you can't do it, it's okay. It's like, we'll do it next time. You know, we're going to do it again. And you can bow out or you can walk off the course or you can, you know, it's a controlled environment when it comes to these obstacle courses. What I've noticed about life is in life, we face obstacle after obstacle after obstacle, and it's not a controlled environment. In life, it's hard. It's agonizing. It's difficult when you come up against these obstacles. It's painful. In real life, these obstacles carry far greater weight. And they're unpredictable. And it leads to hardship. So we've been in this series over the last few weeks called Don't Give Up. And we've been looking at Hebrews chapter 11 and Hebrews chapter 12 about those heroes of the faith who have gone before us, who went through incredible hardship, incredible obstacles, but they set the example for us how to not give up. And we've read verses like this one in Hebrews 12:1, the last part of that verse. It says, "And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us." Let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. And this word race is a Greek word. The Greek word agon means agony. It's where we get our word agony. There is this agony that you're going to go through. It's marked out for you. That means your sides are going to hurt. Your muscles are going to cramp. Your lungs are going to burn. That's what we're going to experience in life. And, you know, frankly, we don't really want to hear that. I mean, it's one thing to say, hey, I'm going to go do the Tough Mudder for a little while. But it's another thing when someone says, you know what, your life is going to be hard and your lungs are going to burn. I'm like, you know, I'd rather run on the beach, you know. I'd rather run on the beach where it's all flat, no hills, and the breeze at my back, you know, some music playing, like that. And then, you know, maybe some cold drink stops, you know, along the way. You know, I want a fun run. That's what I want in my life. I want a fun run. And Hebrews is saying, no, life is not a fun run. Life is a Tough Mudder. Life is a Tough Mudder. And it's going to be hard and it's going to be agonizing. And it's going to be difficult. It's a warrior sport. And you don't get to choose the difficulty level. It's kind of like in Tough Mudder, you go looking for the obstacles. But in real life, The obstacles will find you. You really don't have to go looking for them. They're going to come your way when you least expect it. The obstacles will come when you had no idea they were there, and they're going to hit you right in the face. I remember when I was in high school. You know, high school is that period of time in your life when your self-confidence is fragile, when it's at that point in time when you really aren't real confident in yourself. And I remember our class was having a class party, and I went to a small school. There was only 27 in my graduating class, so when I say class party, yeah, we were all there. And so we went to one of our friend's house, and I'd never been there before. I wasn't old enough to drive. My parents dropped me off, and you know, I got out on the driveway, and it was apparent that everybody was going in and out of the garage. The door was up. There was some stuff out in the garage, and you could see right into the living room where people were hanging out and playing around and having fun. So when I arrived, there were people already there, and so I start walking through the garage, and I can see everybody inside. And right at that moment, some of the group of guys in there, they saw me come. They're like, "Wayne," you know, that kind of thing. I'm like, "Hey," and they're running towards me. And so I start bounding up the steps in the garage to run towards them. And as soon as we did, I bound up the steps. Next thing I knew, I was like, "Poof," and there was a screen door there I had not seen. And literally, I just bent the whole frame, and the thing just formed into my body coming in. And it was, I hit it so hard because I was like, "Wayne, hey!" I just like, poof, that I kind of felt stuck for a minute. It's like you form the screen around your body, and it's like, how do you get? And then, I mean, the place just thought that was the funniest thing they had ever seen. People were falling on the ground. Guys are laughing. They're pointing, the whole thing. And I was just in shock. And right at that moment, this large figure appeared in front of me, in front of the screen door. It was the owner of the home. He was not happy. He never broke a smile. He never laughed. He never even said, "It's okay, we can get it fixed." He never said, "Hi, what's your name?" Nothing. He just took the door off, turned it sideways, and walked out of the garage with it. And here I am, this insecure high school scrawny kid going, "Sorry about the door." And everybody's laughing. And I, you know, it's just one of those examples when, man, obstacles hit you in the face when you don't even know they're there. And that's kind of what happens in life too. It comes your way, it finds you. And for some of you, maybe you have run into some obstacles that you didn't see coming. It may be a disease that you're battling right now. You didn't cause this. You didn't ask this. Maybe it's even the type of disease that typically comes with certain behaviors that would lead to that disease. And you haven't participated in those behaviors, and yet you got it. And maybe for some of you, you're up against failed relationships or emotional breakdowns or battles of anxiety or depression or insecure jobs or financial stress or spiritual drains that you're dealing with, and you didn't see these coming, but boy, they came to you. And if that's you, you just need to know, in Hebrews chapter 11 and Hebrews chapter 12, you've got people of faith who love God, and God loves them, who are coming up against obstacle after obstacle, hardship after hardship. It looks like a life where some agony is involved. Lungs are burning, muscles are cramping, and yet they were faithful. And so you've got Abraham coming up against the obstacle of his age when he was to be the father of a nation and he couldn't have kids. Or you come up against the obstacle faced by Noah. Noah was in a culture of complete ungodliness, recklessness. Man, it feels like that more and more too for us. You have David, who had his Goliath, and then he had his himself as his own obstacle. Then you had Moses in the wilderness and a complaining people and who they lacked food and resources and water, his obstacles that he faced. It's just obstacle after obstacle. And in Hebrews chapter 11, you come to verse 30 and you read this, it says, by faith, the walls. That doesn't matter who you are. You can be a person of great faith and you're going to run into a wall. You're going to come up against a wall. And in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 30, it was the walls of Jericho that they came up against. These walls that towered to the sky, one of the oldest cities on record. As they went into the promised land, they were going to have to get through Jericho in order to get to the promised land. That was the walls that they faced. And all these heroes of faith faced wall after wall, barrier after barrier, obstacle after obstacle. And I think of one of those men of faith who had to deal with walls. His name was Nehemiah. Nehemiah was one of those Israelites that was the result of Israel being conquered by Babylon in 586 BC and carried off into exile. The Babylonians were conquered by the Persians, and the Persians were now in power, and Nehemiah was cupbearer to the king, a very prominent position, but he was in exile in a foreign land. He's about 1,000 miles from Jerusalem. And when you look at Nehemiah's life, you see someone who came up against some walls. In fact, let me just say this quote real quick. Anytime you are going to live by faith, you can expect to face a wall, an obstacle that stands in the way and then brings grief into your life. Every one of us are going to face a wall, an obstacle. And Nehemiah was no exception. One day, Nehemiah's brother came to visit him, and some men from Judah who had been a part of the exile, these Jewish remnant, and they came to him and talked to him, and he asked about the condition of Jerusalem and the people who had been in exile, and here's what they said to him. I want to go back to Nehemiah chapter 1, verses 3 through 4, and we read this. Nehemiah says, "They said to me, 'Those who survived the exile and are back in the province are in great trouble and disgrace. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down, its gates have been burned with fire.' And when I heard these things, I sat down and I wept. For some days I mourned and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven." Nehemiah gets this report. He hears what's happening in Jerusalem. He hears what's happening to his people. And he's just overcome with sorrow and conviction. He wants to do something about it. And in Nehemiah's life, in the book of Nehemiah, and his stories are recorded for us in the books of Ezra and Nehemiah, but in the book of Nehemiah, you just see him coming up against obstacle after obstacle, hardship after hardship. It just demonstrates that obstacles will find their way into your life, but they must be overcome. They must be overcome. And when I look at the obstacles that Nehemiah faced, though his story may be different than your story, the obstacles he came up against are the same obstacles that you have to overcome as well. And the very first obstacle that he overcomes is somewhat impressive to me in light of his circumstance and his situation. And it's this, it's the obstacle of indifference. It was the obstacle of indifference. Indifference is the mother of all obstacles. Because you fail before you start. You're never even allowed to get going. And Nehemiah was one who had a very comfortable position, in some ways a comfortable life, serving in the palace of the king. It was one in which he had the king's ear. Jerusalem's 1,000 miles away. He likely had never been there. It had been over 100 years that the Jews had been in exile, and that city was lying in ruins. And I mean, what could he do about it? I think for Nehemiah, that he probably would have been like most of us when you hear news about something. You're like, you know, who am I to do something about that? Psychologists will call this the bystander effect. The bystander effect, which happens when something bad is happening, something really bad is happening, and yet there are people who could engage or are positioned to do something, but they don't do anything. We've heard some tragic, horrible stories about that. And of course, in our culture today, the thing that most people do in that moment, which is part of the bystander effect, is now with videos on their phones, they just pull out their phones and start videotaping the event rather than engaging in the event. That they see themselves as spectators, not as responders, as observers, not as participants. It's the bystander effect that keeps people from actually making a difference and engaging and doing something about it. It's something that we all deal with, not just when we are out in public and something bad is happening, but it happens in our own homes, in our own lives. Something bad's happening and we're indifferent to it, or we don't engage, or we don't correct it. We don't act on it. But when you look at Nehemiah's life as an example, you see somebody who engages, somebody who gets involved. In fact, you see that in Scripture with a lot of people, like Isaiah, who says, "Here I am, use me." And so when you look at some of the heroes of faith, they didn't have an attitude of indifference. They had an attitude, "We're going to do something about it. We're going to engage this. We're not going to wait on someone else. We're not going to wait on something else. We're going to do it." And so maybe today God is pressing on you to initiate getting involved. Maybe you need to initiate some forgiveness. Maybe you need to initiate some reconciliation. Maybe you need to initiate making some tough decisions that would lead to physical health or spiritual health or financial health. Maybe there's some things that you need to care about that you haven't cared about. Maybe there's a need that you see and you're thinking to yourself, man, somebody should do something about that. And now today you're realizing you're the one that should do something about that. That you shouldn't carry an attitude of indifference, but you should engage. You should get involved. Nehemiah overcame this obstacle of indifference that we all come up against so he could get involved. Here's another obstacle. It's the obstacle of insufficiency. You're very familiar with this obstacle. It's the one where you feel like you're in over your head or you don't have what it takes to do this or you feel inadequate. There is no doubt that Nehemiah felt that way. In fact, the very first thing that Nehemiah does when he hears about this is he cries out to God, which is the right response, but unfortunately for a lot of us, it's the last one. It's the one we do when we feel so desperate we can't think of anything else. But for Nehemiah, it was the first thing he did. He cried out to God. He knew this was way bigger than him. And the second thing he does is he goes by night to scope out the extent of the work that was needed in the city of Jerusalem, him personally, so he could see just how big of a task this was going to be, so he could confirm what his worst fears. And then the third thing he does is he casts vision to the leaders so that he can begin to solicit the help and the buy-in of the people, because he knew if we're going to do what God is calling us to do, if we're going to run the race that God has marked out for us, it's going to require the help of our God, and it's going to require the help of God's people. It's going to require God himself and God's people in order to do this. And the same thing is true for each and every one of us. If you are going to run the race that God has marked out for you, as Christians, we all have a similar race, but each of us have a unique race that God is calling us to. If you're going to run that race, you're going to have the power of God. It's impossible to run without his power. If you're running a race in your own power, it's not the race God marked out for you. It's going to require God's strength in your life, but it's also going to require the help of others. This race is not intended to be run alone. That's why Hebrews 11 and 12 lists so many people of faith as examples for us to follow, because we need that. So many encouragers who are prodding us along. That's why there's so many words in Hebrews, even chapter 10, leading into those stories, telling us that we got to encourage one another, because we need one another. We got to lean into God. We got to lean into each other, because we don't have what it takes to run it by ourselves. And then there's this third opposition that we come up against. It's the obstacle, or I think I said it backwards, but anyway, it's the obstacle of opposition. That any time you're doing what God would have you to do, you will face opposition. Why? Because God is opposed. He's opposed by the evil one. He's opposed by evil. And so God is always opposed. So anytime you're doing what God would have you to do, you will be opposed. I think we need to be reminded of that. Sometimes maybe we think that if God is in it, then it's smooth sailing. Oh, this is evidence. God is in this story because look, he's paving the path for me. Woo, here we go. Oftentimes when you're doing what God would have you to do, there's going to be opposition. You're going to come up against some pretty major obstacles. The work of God is always opposed. And that's what we see happening here in the book of Nehemiah. We see the opposition showing up early to intimidate and discourage him. In chapter 2, verse 19, they make accusations and say that Nehemiah is rebelling against the king, the king he even served. They start mocking the Israelites and their desire to worship God together in Jerusalem. They even begin to criticize the quality of their work, even though there's still walls standing in Jerusalem of their work. They rumored that Nehemiah was setting himself up as king and he was trying to rule over people. They plotted to kill the laborers while they were working and distract them. They attempted to lure Nehemiah into the temple to kill him. These were the other groups of people around Jerusalem who opposed what he was doing, and they wanted it to stop. And as if that wasn't hard enough, we all know that opposition doesn't just come from without. Opposition often comes from within. Sometimes from people that you would expect to to lean on or to encourage you, to prod you, or to be proud of you. Sometimes those can be the very people that discourage you. And it's so hard when you feel like you're finding opposition or obstacles from within. Maybe for you, maybe you have a spouse who's just annoyed at your new spiritual commitment. And you have a fresh new journey towards the Lord, and maybe they're just not appreciating it right now. Maybe you have a close friend who gives you a hard time. You're coming out of an addictive, bad habit, but they've participated in the habit before too, and they're not sure they want to lose you as a friend in that way, and so you find them actually discouraging you. Maybe a person close to you is speaking words of doubt and skepticism over your goal to become healthy or to lose weight or to exercise, and they're like, yeah, right, as if that's going to last, and you find that the opposition's coming from within. I think it's important to remember that sometimes when we think when we come up against opposition, it's evidence that we're not in God's will. Oh, he's shutting the door. He's making, he must be closing the door here, so I can't go through it. Instead of realizing when you are in the will of God, you're going to face obstacles that you've got to go through those obstacles. It's typically not evidence that you're not in God's will. Opposition is typically evidence that you are in God's will. And so smooth sailing is not the evidence. Hebrews says you're running a race of agony and hardship. That's why one of the best things we can do today, as I'm going to talk about in a minute, is to encourage one another. Man, we all just need some encouragement. Discouragement is the ultimate tool of Satan to beat us down. And some people just need a right word at the right time from you to prod them on in the faith. I'm going to talk more about that in a minute, but let me give you the last obstacle I'm going to talk about, number four, and it's this. It's the obstacle of slow progress. This was a major obstacle Nehemiah had to deal with. In the big scheme of things, in the big picture, the project was only 52 days long. It was miraculous what they accomplished in such a short amount of time. But what Nehemiah reveals to us is there comes that point in a project when it's going slower than you thought or it's harder than you thought. That point in a project when it's taking longer than expected, that your strength begins to give out. You begin to get tired and you're struggling. Like in Nehemiah chapter 4, verse 6, it tells us there that the walls reached half their height. And you're thinking, wow, already? That's awesome. And then it says this, the walls reached half their height. And then it says this in verse 10, meanwhile, the people in Judah said, the strength of the laborers is giving out, and there's so much rubble that we cannot rebuild the wall. They're halfway done. I mean, it's like they're getting over the hump, and everybody's giving up. We can't do it. We're exhausted, we're tired, and we're only halfway there. You know the feeling. Maybe you've been in a race before, and you reach that halfway point. And you're like, hey, I'm halfway. And then all of a sudden, you're like, I'm only halfway. You know, there's that feeling of, I don't know that I can do this. It's just too much. And they became discouraged. We can't even rebuild it. They had the whole thing done in 52 days. Their perspective was just looking at the obstacles and not looking at the potential that lied before them. And maybe you've been there. Maybe a month ago, you made a commitment to pay off debt. And then unexpected expenses came up. Maybe you started praying with your spouse. And then you had a fight. And you haven't resumed your prayers. Maybe you started reading scripture and spending time with God because it had been an area in your life you'd been neglecting and you wanted to encounter him and know him again. And then you got busy again and then you kind of lost your fervor and about halfway through, now you're not doing anything now. And you're starting to throw in the towel when you need to persevere. You're halfway there. We need to endure. Have you ever had a project that just felt like it was going slower than you wanted it to go? Exhibit A, the generous project. We've had over a month of rain days for those workers. So there's some days I'm in my office and it's just like, it's just like, and I'm like, trying to work. And I actually like those days. We're working, progress. And then there's those days when all you hear is the pitter-patter of rain. We were hoping we'd be done by the end of January, and now it's looking like the end of February, maybe the 1st of March. That's the word. And you start getting frustrated with the progress. we're getting so close. We're making progress, but we're not there yet. We have space issues. We have parking issues. We're going to have 200 more spots. And so we want that. It gets frustrating. I was even thinking this week, you know, we're halfway there in our commitments. A lot of you who are part of Northside, we made commitments over a year and a half ago, of over $3.2 million for this project. And I just happened to look this week, and we're basically 50% of the way there. People have given over $1.6 million to it already. And so we can celebrate that, but you're halfway there. And some of you who made those commitments, you're like, you know, you may feel like you're halfway there, or maybe you're less than halfway there, and life happened, obstacles came in the way, and you're starting to get discouraged. And these are those moments where we persevere and we push through and we keep on keeping on and we keep going. But in Nehemiah's day, halfway there wore him out. And what you need to know is that when you're halfway there, you're about to get over the hump. I know here at Northside, we've faced growth inhibiting factors for several years. I know there are people who still go to our 11:30 service who'd rather be in our 9 o'clock service, but they go to 11:30 because they're trying to make room for more people. And today our 9 o'clock service looked pretty much like this room. And so those people are doing that because they want to make room for more, but you better believe it. They can't wait till we get some more room. People are serving at hours that it's not convenient for their family. It's not when they want to serve, but they're doing it because that is helpful to the growth of the kingdom and the growth of the church, and they want to connect people to Christ and one another. And so we're halfway there. We got to keep persevering. Satan wants to use obstacles to crush your resolve, diminish your faith, fuel your doubts, cause you to question your path. But God wants to use these obstacles to grow your faith, test your allegiance, enhance your resolve, and expand your understanding. He wants to increase your trust to build confidence. That's what God's wanting to do in your life. And so today, I just want to encourage you with a couple of ways that you can respond to obstacles. A couple of ways you can respond to obstacles by using Nehemiah as our example of response. And here's the first one. It's this. It's pray your way through obstacles. Pray your way through obstacles. Nehemiah's book is essentially a 2,500-year-old prayer journal. Every time that man came up against an obstacle, the first thing he did was pray. In fact, in Nehemiah chapter 1, that's how it begins. He hears what's going on in Jerusalem, and the very next verses, starting in verse 5, says, Then Nehemiah said, Lord, the God of heaven, the great and awesome God, who keeps his covenant of love with those who love him and keep his commandments. Let your ear be attentive and your eyes open to hear the prayer your servant is praying before you day and night. The first thing he does is he remembers who God is. God, I'm hearing a report that I don't have the resources to do myself. I'm insufficient. I don't have what it takes. But God, you do. You're the great and awesome and mighty God. And there's something about a prayer when you talk to the sovereign God who's ruler over all, that helps give you perspective. And suddenly, this obstacle that seems insurmountable, this barrier that seems so large, seems to come into its proper perspective when you realize, with me it's impossible, but with God, all things are possible. When you fix your thoughts on God, when you worship, that's why worship is so important. You walk in on a Sunday morning and you worship like you did today, not just corporately, when you worship privately in your own life as well. Worship is so important because it puts your thoughts on God and you're reminded of how great and grand and big he is. Those 52 days to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem, that seems like it wasn't that long, but to the people, there came a point when the opposition and the fear and the challenge was so huge, those stones were so massive, those walls were so big. And what I remember is in Nehemiah chapter 1, Nehemiah starts praying. You get to chapter 2 and 4 months has passed and not one thing has been accomplished. He hasn't gone to Jerusalem. The walls aren't being built. And you're like, you know, where was the work for 4 months between Nehemiah chapter 1 and Nehemiah chapter 2? And as you begin chapter 2, you begin to realize, oh, there was a lot of work being done. It wasn't the work of man. It was the work of God. Because in Nehemiah chapter 2, the king sees that Nehemiah is downcast and saddened, but he's not sick, and the king calls him out on it, which is a no-no in the king's presence. Nehemiah is afraid and fearful, but he's honest, and he tells the king, and the king asks him what he wants. He tells him the story. The king gives him leave, tells him he can go to Jerusalem. He can take soldiers for protection. He can take timber to help rebuild gates. He starts giving him resources. And the response of the king, you go, this was God. This was not natural. This was not normal. The response, it was God. And you realize that in those 4 months, God was at work. It seems often that we want to do the work when God is the one who does the best work. In fact, in the book by Paul Borthwick, How to Be a World-Class Christian, he tells the story about a short-term mission trip that he was leading. And he was taking a group to Nairobi. He had done this before, times before. And with this group, he'd worked so hard to get all the connecting flights to work out, to get all the people in the right places at the right time, to get the luggage, you know, where it needed to be and to show up. And he had been on trip after trip when none of that happened. People weren't where they were supposed to be. Flights got canceled. Luggage didn't make it where it was supposed to be. In fact, he hadn't had one trip to Nairobi. This worked out the way it was supposed to work out. But on this occasion, his group gets to the Nairobi airport and they all get there at the right time and they're all together and the luggage all arrives and they have it all. And they're walking out of the airport to meet their team that they're going to work with in Nairobi. And he's thinking to himself, wow, this is awesome. All those plans, you know, I worked so hard for it. They came through. They came to fruition. But they walked out and they met up with the other group that was meeting them to do the work there in Nairobi. And the other group was hugging them and greeting them and saying to them, we're so glad you're here. And then they said this. They said, each and every one of us have prayed for each and every one of you. We've prayed for 2 months, every single day, for you and for this trip. And all of a sudden, Paul said he realized in that moment, it wasn't his planning that made the difference. It was the praying that made the difference. This is why on Sunday mornings, around 8:15 a.m., there's a group of people that come together and they meet down in room 106 underneath the worship center here and they pray. And they pray for the people in this church, and they pray for what God is going to do on these Sunday mornings. And so when Dick and Robin Clay get together, and Bob and Patty Neal, and Neil and Rusty Owings, and Bob or Brad Parrish, and sometimes Mindy Kendrick, and I go down to join them to pray before our first service that morning, they know that prayer does the work. Prayer makes the difference. They would love for more people to join them down there just to pray because they know that the power of God is what undergirds what he's doing here. When we started the Generous Project, we were praying at 6:18 every day. Whether it was evening or morning, it was up to you. But at 6:18 every day, we were praying for what God was going to do through this project to connect more people to Christ, one another. We were asking for his leading. We've already seen miracles happen through that effort, and it continues to happen. I don't know if you're still doing that when we're halfway through. If not, I want to encourage you to start praying again. Our prayers should not end. Prayer is the power. In fact, prayer is what turns obstacles into opportunities. Prayer is what turns those obstacles we face, those walls in our life, into opportunities. It's prayer that does the miracle work. It's an opportunity for God to work. So I want to encourage you to pray. And then finally, I want to move quickly through this. I want to encourage you to move forward in spite of the obstacles. Once you've gone to God and you've prayed and you've received his power, you move forward in spite of the opposition that you face. When you face obstacles and criticism, you're going to be discouraged. But people who face obstacles can either wallow in their discouragement or they can allow it to make them determined. Determined to move forward in spite of it. Nehemiah didn't get critical, cynical, or even negative. Instead, he began to persevere. If you feel discouraged, if you feel worn out, if you want to quit, I want to encourage you not to quit, and here's why. Because at the point in which you're most ready to quit is likely the turning point when the momentum is beginning to build. That's the way it was for Nehemiah and for those people. Once they got over that hump, they were about to give up and quit, but that was the moment when everything was on a roll and they were about to finish the project. That can be a turning point. Your decision at the moment you want to quit is a critical decision. And what God is calling you to do in your race, you better do it. So let's encourage one another with this. In fact, Hebrews 10, 24 to 25, it says, let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promised is faithful, and let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds. Not giving up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. The power of encouragement is so real that the writer of Hebrews, before he gets to chapter 11 of all those heroes of faith, he's telling us, encourage one another, prod one another along, build each other up. People are getting worn out. They're getting fatigued. They're starting to wallow in their faith. This is the moment to prod them along, encourage them. And he goes on to say this, another reason we should encourage one another is we need the encouragement of one another, but also we need the encouragement of God. That's why he refers to Jesus. In Hebrews 12, 2, where it says, consider him, consider Jesus, who endured such opposition. Think of the obstacles that Jesus came up against, from religious leaders to his own disciples who abandoned him and betrayed him and denied him, to the obstacle of pain and fear as he went to the cross. It says that, consider him who endured such opposition from sinners so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. Why does the writer want us to think on Jesus? So that you won't quit, so you won't give up, so you will persevere. So just as he was able to move forward through those obstacles in the power of his Father, so you can too. Just like those heroes of faith who move forward in spite of their obstacles by the power of God, prodding and encouraging one another along, we do this so that we won't grow weary, so we won't give up on our race. That means if you're going to not quit, you need to think about the cross. Because if anybody was going to quit, that might be a good time to do it, but Jesus refused. He endured it. So we want to fix our thoughts on him so that we might persevere in our faith. So I want to invite you to stand right now. I want to ask that our servers be dismissed for a time of communion. I want us just to sing about a sovereign, powerful God. Let your eyes be lifted up. Let your voices be lifted up so you can be reminded of the God who can do the impossible, who can do more than you could ask or imagine. The God who's sovereign and in control, it will bring your obstacles into perspective. And then once you finish singing and remembering that God, you can partake of bread, remembering his body broken for you. You can drink of a cup representing the blood that was shed for you. And as you eat and drink of this in remembrance of him, you'll be encouraged. You will not grow weary, and you won't lose heart. Let's sing together.
Thanks for joining Northside Christian Church for our weekly podcast. Don't forget to share your story with us by emailing amen@northsidechristianchurch.net or by tagging your tweets with #AmenNCC.